Welcome to What's the Mood with the Illinois Human Performance Project, where we talk all things about proper sleep, nutrition, mood, and mindset and chemical health. We're so glad you're here. Today, we're joined by Tyler Pazik, who is a sports psychologist. He works with sports teams, Fortune 500 companies, all the way to a Heisman Trophy winner. He focuses on confidence, culture, and leadership. So join me in welcoming Tyler. All right, Tyler, welcome to What's the Mood? How are you?
Great, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So we'll just get right to it. So let's just start with, why don't you tell us a little bit about like who Tyler was growing up, his hobbies, his sports, what was he like?
So growing up, let's see. I mean, since I can remember, I've always been like in love with playing baseball and playing sports in general, but definitely baseball was kind of like my early love. And then I chased that dream all the way through college, and I played at Indiana State as well. But after I got done with playing baseball, I was looking back on my life about like, okay, what do I want to get into now? And I realized that like throughout my entire life, I'd really been like coaching as well as playing. So like back when I was 9 years old, I remember I got pulled from a baseball game and I was sitting on the bench like crying because I just got pulled in the middle of the game. And my coach came up to me afterwards, after I kind of settled down, and he's like, hey man, like when you're out there on the baseball field, like I need you to be playing your position. You can't be over there trying to teach somebody how to field the ground ball and whatnot. So even from the time I was little, I was really into coaching as well. So that's also been part of my passion. It's like, okay, playing sports, but then also teaching others how to be successful in playing sports. But outside of baseball, I don't know, like another one of my loves is snowboarding. Like I love to snowboard and get out there and all of the winter activities really, but anything that can get me outside doing something, that's awesome to me. Love doing that stuff. Just getting out and being in nature, like mountain biking as well, or getting out on the boat and going wakeboarding or something like that. So much fun.
That's great. Is there someone like in your family or a friend who kind of introduced you to this stuff, or did you learn it all on your own?
I've always been doing organized sports, I would say. Like my parents had me in organized sports growing up. And then as I got out on my own, I got into more of like the individual stuff, like mountain biking and running and hiking, and then snowboarding as well.
Cool. All right, so Tyler, it was called out in you as a little guy that you like loved to coach others. So my next question for you is, how, you know, from that point, how did you find yourself in the field of mental performance coaching? How did you get there?
Yeah, I was so after I got done with college, I was a strength coach and a baseball coach. I was working like three different jobs. I was a high school strength coach, and then I was a junior college strength coach, and I was a baseball coach. And I was working from, I would wake up basically every morning at like six. I would get to the gym by seven, and then I would work out from 7 to 8 and then start work at 8:30. And then I would work until 4:30 and then go to my second job as a baseball coach. And I would work from like 30 to probably like 10:30, get home at 11 and do it all over again. And so I was 6 days a week for a year and a half. And I was like, okay, this can literally not be it. Like I was so burnt out working and just in the grind and the thick of it. I'm like, there has to be a better way. And so that's when I sat down and I was like, okay, like what do I love to do? What does the world need? And what could I be really good at? And I sat back and reflected on all the coaching that I had done. And I'd always been into the mental game. But I took a sports psychology class when I was at Indiana State. And I thought back to that class and how awesome it was. And so I looked up, you know, like, can you make a living being a sports psych coach or consultant? And sure enough, you could. So I started looking into that. And I just sat down. And one thing I've always been told throughout my life is that, like, I've been pretty good at everything. Like, I pick things up pretty easily. And so I was sitting there. I'm like, I don't want to be good at everything. I want to be great at something. And so I'm like, what would I spend? What am I okay like spending the rest of my life doing? And like when I die, like what do I want to have like given to the world, you know? And so like mental performance coaching came to mind. And like in that moment, I just committed to that. And so ever since then, I had that conversation with myself back in like 2015. So 7 years now, and I've just been sort of chasing the mental performance dream for myself since then.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that. That resonates with me. I've often been told I've been good at a lot of things and have always kind of desired to figure out, well, what can I be great at then? So
yeah, I think the word good is so funny, because the word good, if you look up the definition, it means like satisfactory, mm-hmm. but not outstanding. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, I want to be outstanding. You know, and I think a lot of coaches say that, like when their kid does something or their athlete does something, they're like, oh, good job. You know, and it's like, good is a diss to me. I'm like, I want it to be great, you know, or I want it to be outstanding. And again, the definition of good is satisfactory, but not outstanding. So,
yeah. Okay. So you've been at the whole, you know, mental performance coaching since 2015, I think you said. What's one of the greatest needs you've seen in your field of work, maybe overall, and then specifically in this past year?
Let's see. So one of the greatest needs, a lot of people come to me with like confidence and leadership and communication. Like I would say if there's three pillars to what I do, it's those three: confidence, leadership, and communication. Okay. So within that, there's, you know, a whole slew of different things that people come to me with. The one that's popping to mind right now, probably because I just had, call about this with an athlete, but the word gamesmanship comes to mind. So gamesmanship is basically like using various tactics to gain a psychological advantage. And so like that could be a psychological advantage over your opponent, you know, maybe like the classic one is like smack talking, right? Like you might not necessarily be better than the other person, but you can get them out of control by saying certain things to them. And then their performance takes a hit and you're able to overcome in those moments. Or another psychological advantage could be you working on your routines, or you journaling your thoughts, or you employing some sort of meditation in the morning or before your matches, so that when you go out there, you're focused and present. So like mm-hmm. that could be another psychological advantage. But I would say that like recently, that's a term that I've come back to over and over again. And the more I think back to it, the more that I realize that I had to be that as well. So like in my career, I was never like the most skilled athlete, but or the most talented athlete, but I still had to find ways to win. Right. And that's where gamesmanship comes into play, is like employing different tactics to mm-hmm. help you up level your psyche. And at the same time, like you might be doing something to gain a psychological advantage over your opponent, so that, you know, you can ultimately be the victor.
Sure. Wow. And would you say that's been one of the greatest needs in the last year as well?
I would say so. I think there's a lot of kids that haven't necessarily been taught the nuances of their sport. Like now that I've been helping out this junior college baseball team near where I live in Chicago a little bit more on a day-to-day basis. And being in it now, I realize that, okay, coaches that say they like don't have time to practice mental performance or mental skills, that's definitely a lie, because it definitely is easy to implement these sort of things. Mm-hmm. Sure. And then on top of it, what I've noticed is that, like, I don't know if it was COVID or what, but there's just been like a lack of that sport IQ being taught to the kids, so that they, you know, can use the rules of the game to their advantage. So I would say that, yeah, that is probably one of the bigger pieces. most recently. Another one that's coming to mind is meditation, like I had brought up, like using some sort of meditation, whether that's just a simple breath before getting into your sport or going and like partaking in the activity, or sitting down for more of like a standard meditation where you're sitting there with your thoughts or focusing on your breath or focusing on a mantra for, 1, 3, 5, 10 minutes before you go out there into the game. So that one is, I talk about that one a lot, and it really does help, like everybody that works it. It works if you work it, type of thing.
Sure. Curious, do you get resistance when it comes to mental performance coaching? Like, is there good buy-in for it, or do you have to overcome barriers with people about that?
Yeah, I would say that it depends on the coach that you're talking to. More and more, it's openly talked about and wanted and needed, but there still are like some of those old school coaches that, don't necessarily believe in it. And so for those people, it's definitely a little bit of a different route you have to take, because what it really is the lack of trust. Like, you just haven't built up the relationship with them enough to understand their challenges and problems. And then coming in with a solution or some way that you can help them through mental skills, or they're just like not willing to even listen to you. So you kind of have to build up the relationship with them first, before you say like, hey, here's one thing that you could do to help up level your athlete's performance.
I agree with you on that. The relationship is key.
Yeah, and I think
Okay.
that's like across everything, like that's one of the reasons like I focus so much on communication, because if you want to get results, it really comes back to building trust. And how do you build trust? You have to be a solid communicator, both verbally and non-verbally.
Yeah, and you have to care more about the person than what you can get from them, or yeah,
And
that's
then that way,
important.
when you do go to them with something, they'll be like, oh, okay, I'll try that out. Like I just got off a call earlier today with an athlete. He's a professional bowler on tour, and he's never done meditation before. And if I would have brought that up with him on our first call or like in our first meeting, maybe he would have been like, okay, I'll give it a go, because like he came to me for mental performance. So there's already that, like that he already trusts implicitly that I know what I'm talking about. But he might have thought, or maybe not have stuck with it if I brought it up too early, because he's never done it and he doesn't know anything about it.
A good point. All right, tell us about a time that you managed mental burnout and fatigue.
So one time that I managed that, well, I told you about one time already where, I was working for 6 days a week. And I was getting a little burnt out, and that's when I started like looking towards other avenues. But in that time, I did have that 7th day of the week where literally I would do nothing other than just sit and read and journal and just relax like the entire day, like not fill my day with all of these different things that I wanted to do, but just filling it with time for myself. And even now, today, like I would say that having a morning routine really helps me deal with that burnout and mental fatigue that comes with the daily stressors of life. So like having something in the morning for me, for instance, there's three things that I do every morning. I tap, I meditate, and I journal. And so tapping is an energy technique where it's like self-acupuncture. You tap different parts of your body. A few of those points are on your face, and then a few other points that you tap, you physically tap for those that are listening, like your collarbones, your sternum, underneath your pecs, on your upper ribs. And you basically go through like telling yourself affirmations while you tap those, and it resets your mind body system to help you get into a calm mind, relaxed body state. And then I meditate for anywhere between 5 and 10 minutes, and usually I just focus on my breath for that, and then I sit down and I journal, and I do free flow journaling. So I literally set my watch for 10 minutes and then I just write about whatever's on my mind at that moment. Sometimes I'll have more structured prompts based off, because I also have a coach. So like if I'm in my meeting with my coach and something comes up, she'll ask me to write about that. And so sometimes I'll have more structured prompts, but I would say 80% of the time, it's just whatever is on my mind. And what that's called, it's called brain mapping. So there's a, she's pretty famous. Caroline Leaf is a psychologist who talks about brain mapping a lot. And when you write down your thoughts on the paper in front of you, your brain can look at those words and say like, oh, okay, this makes complete sense. Or it looks at those words and it says, that's the most ridiculous statement you've ever made. You know, like, let's change that. And you kind of like work yourself back to this productive mindset. And like, that's how you build that intrinsic motivation and inspiration. Instead of waiting for somebody else to do it for you, you know, you're doing it yourself. And that's like, that's the only true source of motivation and inspiration at the end of the day, is like when it's self-motivated. So that's why journaling helps so much. Talking to others can help as well. You know, if you have a good therapist or a good counselor, but at the end of the day, there's like, there's nothing quite like writing down your thoughts and seeing them on the paper in front of you.
Your affirmations, are they the same ones every day? Do you change them? How did you develop the ones you use?
So I worked with a energy practitioner named Greg Warburton. He was also a childhood trauma counselor for 37 years. And he found tapping these different energy techniques because he was working with these kids that had this incredible trauma in their life. And he had like a 10% success rate. And he's like, okay, there has to be a better way. And so he started looking more into Eastern medicine and energy techniques. And he started using it with the kids, and literally his numbers reversed like overnight. And he had a 90% success rate with these kids through using the energy techniques. So he taught me how to do it. And I took his protocol and then sort of made it my own over time. So like the first three that I say are like, I'm choosing to let go of all noticed and unnoticed doubt in my mind, body, joints, and muscles. I'm choosing to let go of all noticed and unnoticed anxiety and stress in my mind, body, joints, and muscles. I'm choosing to let go of all noticed and unnoticed negative and unproductive thought energy in my mind and body, joints, and muscles. And then after that, I say, I'm choosing to transform this energy into a powerful day. I'm choosing to create a laser-like focus on my why, which is to help others and myself achieve self-reliance. And then I talk about my values. So four of my values are commitment, grit, focus, and energy. So I'll say I'm choosing to feel committed, focused, gritty, and energetic today. And I'll do that. And then I'll say I'm choosing to love my friends, and I'll pick a couple of people that come to mind, and I'll think about them. And then I say, I'm choosing to love my family, and I'll bring to mind a couple of family members. And then the last two things that I say is, I'm choosing to love myself and my future self. And then the last one is, I'm choosing to love my past self for bringing me to this moment right here, right now. Let's be great. And that's how I finish it.
That's good. I found like seven affirmations for a magical day, like a year and a half ago. For whatever reason, through that meditation, they just stuck with me. And I was like, I'm going to memorize these. And I say them to myself at least one time a day. And it really does something. It's powerful how that works.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, having those little reminders, like basically that's what meditation helps with too. Like you want to train yourself to fall back on something that actually like fits with your personality and the mindset that you're trying to have, or that the mindset, not just trying to have, but you do have. So you need those little reminders throughout the day to keep you focused on track.
Yeah. So tell us, about a physical feat that you're proud of, that you've accomplished.
So a physical feat that I think about a lot is I ran a 100-mile race across the state of Michigan. It was a 100-mile foot race, and I finished it in around 26 hours. But that was the race that I realized that I could literally do anything if I just put my mind to it. And I remember I was at mile 78. I put my hands on my knees and I was about to start crying because I was just so physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, like beat down from running for the past however many hours. And it was the middle of the night. And yeah, like, put my hands on my knees and I was going to start crying. And then I just started laughing and I was like, okay, like I'm going to finish this and it's going to be awesome. And like, I don't know, in that moment, things just like clicked. So I think about that quite a bit. And now every year since then, I've done what I call a misogi. And a misogi is like an ancient Japanese word for like something you do every year that fulfills you for the rest of the year and kind of like resets your barometer for like gratefulness and what's possible and whatnot. And so this year I'm doing a stand-up paddleboard race in the Netherlands, which is like 220 kilometers, which is basically like 125 miles. So you do 25 miles on a stand-up paddleboard every day for 5 days. And so that should be pretty cool. And then next year, my misogi is to do a 100-foot free dive in the ocean on like one breath of air. So that'll be pretty cool too, I think. We'll see.
Wow.
But there's two rules to a misogi. One is that it has to be a 50-50 shot that you'll complete it. And the second one is that you don't die. So
okay.
Those are the rules. But it's last year, my misogi was I hiked the tallest peak in Utah, which is King's Peak. And it's about, it's a little under 14,000 feet, but it's a 28-mile hike round trip. And so my goal was to do it from sunup to sundown. And I literally finished it with like 5 minutes before sunset. And that was super intense.
That's exciting. Did you do that individually?
I did it with two of my friends, and that story is pretty crazy because they had never done more than probably, well, the one guy's done like 26 miles in a day, so but it was all flat. It wasn't gaining. I think we gained like close to 8,000 feet in elevation, but his brother had never done anything like that before, and he's 18 years old, and so that was really cool to like finish that with them. And I finished with like 5 minutes to spare because I was like, okay guys, like I'm going to run and finish this. They were both like just dead. And, from being out all day, and I was like trying to push them and they just wouldn't go. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go finish and then I'll come back and get you guys. And it was so cool because I ran ahead and I finished and I turned around to go get them. And sure enough, I see my friend's brother, the 18-year-old, run by me. I'm like, yes, let's go. And I make it to my friend and I'm looking at my watch and I'm like, dude, we're like 0.4 miles away. And I think we had like 3 minutes left. I'm like, just a little tiny jog, man, could get us there. And so he finished with, I think, less than 10 seconds before, you know, the official time for the sunset. It was super cool.
Wow. That's amazing. Thanks for sharing that. All right. So just one last question, really, like any nugget you'd want to share with our audience of people who are about pursuing, you know, optimal human performance at all levels, any nugget, word of encouragement that you'd want to share with someone listening?
Yes. One thing, like set boundaries and protect your sleep. Like, I don't think enough people are sleeping enough nowadays.
Okay.
And
say more about that.
Optimal sleep, you would hopefully be getting more than 8 hours. If you're an athlete, hopefully you're getting more than 9 hours a night to recover. And most people think like, oh no, I can like function on, like, oh, I'm a pretty high functioning person on like 6 hours of sleep. But over the long run, that's just not the case. I think you're more likely to get struck by lightning than to have the gene that allows you to sleep 6 hours and be fully functioning over the long run. So protecting your sleep is huge, and learning more about sleep, you know, taking a course or going online and looking up how to get better sleep or why your sleep is so important. But yeah, I would say that set boundaries with yourself and with others so that you're not, like, if you got to be up at 7 a.m., you're not out until, you know, 11 or getting in bed at 11. Because even if you're getting in bed at 11, then you're still not falling asleep for a little while. And you're still getting under 8 hours at that point. And then not only that, you're probably not getting quality sleep because you're jumping in bed after being out and you're not able to wind down, even though you say, most people say, oh, I'm able to fall asleep like this. And if you're able to fall asleep with the snap of the fingers, then you're probably overtired because with like optimal sleep and whatnot, you want to actually be falling asleep within anywhere from like 5 to 20 minutes, not necessarily right away. If you're falling asleep within 5 minutes of putting your head on the pillow, then you're probably overtired and need more sleep, more consistent sleep than you think. But yeah, I would say that that's the number one thing. Cause when you're tired, you're just a little bit more irritated, a little bit more agitated. You get frustrated quicker. And I think a lot of issues could be solved with people and their relationships and their wanting of more in life if they just got a little more sleep.
Wow. I think that's probably an under talked about subject, actually. Sleep.
Or you're talking about like burnout and fatigue, right? Like if you sleep just a little bit more, maybe you wouldn't be burnt out at work because you're able to have you're better able to have conversations with others, and you know your boss might not necessarily tick you off as much, or your coach might not necessarily tick you off as much because you're you know, you've slept more.
You're rested. Great. Cool. Well, Tyler, this isn't it for us. We know you're going to be with us at our coach's clinic here at the end of the month. We just want to say thank you for being on our podcast, and we look forward to having you at our coach's clinic at the end of April.
Same. Thanks for having me on.